Welcome to Wines We Drink, a podcast for wine lovers and learners. I'm Charlotte Norsworthy Varnum, and together with my counterpart Keith Herndon, we'll be exploring a new wine each week. Keith is a lover of wine, and I am a learner of wine, and we hope that you'll continue learning and sipping along with us. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Wines We Drink, our summer fun project that lets me drink and talk about some spectacular wines. I'm Charlotte Norsworthy Varnum, and my tour guide, as always, is my co-host Keith Herndon, a certified wine sommelier. Hello, Keith.
Hello, Charlotte. Always happy to be your tour guide on this amazing wine journey we call Wines We Drink. Today, we're back on location at our home away from home, the Tapped Athens Wine Tasting Market. We were here last week for our 10th episode, and we'll be back next week to wrap up this third season.
So that means that today is our penultimate episode. I really love that fancy word. It just means second to last. And of course, it's bittersweet to be winding down this season, but we couldn't be at a better place to drink and talk about wine. A big shout out to our friends Todd and Angela Hurt, the Tapped proprietors. They have been exceptionally gracious hosts for us this season. We opened season three here with our first three episodes, and now we're back closing out the season.
Well, we may be closing out the season, but we're going to do it in style. We'll be going out with a bang, okay? Maybe even a big bang. I'm so excited about the wines we'll be drinking today and on the season's conclusion next week.
That sounds so fantastic. I'm looking forward to some more of your delicious wine selections. But first, let me just remind our listeners that if you've missed any of our shows from this season or from seasons one and two, you'll find them on all the major podcast platforms. And we've also assembled a complete episode guide at wineswedrink.com. That's organized by season, so you can go in there and find the exact episode you want and click through and listen. It's a very convenient way to find our shows or find the wines that we've drank. So for now, let's focus on today's show. Keith, what are we drinking today?
Well, Charlotte, we're heading down under for a classic Australian Shiraz from the Barossa Valley. I'm so excited to share this wine with you.
Well, I know you're a big fan of Australian wines, so this is going to be a treat.
I'm not the only fan of Australian wines these days because that country is pumping out some amazing wines. In Decanter Magazine's World Wine Awards this year, Australia scored 10 Best in Show Awards. That was the most of any country. I think that's just one indication that nobody should be sleeping on Aussie wines these days.
Wow, that sounds like they've won the Wine Olympics.
yeah.
So let's go ahead and jump right in. My first question is fairly straightforward. What is Shiraz?
Well, yeah, that is a straightforward question, Charlotte, but the answer to it is a little less than straightforward, okay? That's because Shiraz is essentially a new world name for an old world staple, Syrah. So DNA testing has confirmed that Shiraz and Syrah are the same grapes, but it gets a little more complicated than just some DNA testing, right? Wine drinkers shouldn't expect to experience the same style of wine. A bottle labeled Syrah and one labeled Shiraz will likely be quite different, even though they come from the same fruit.
Okay, well, that's really interesting. What are the key differences then?
Well, I'm going to go back to Decanter Magazine again. That publication has offered up some terrific material on this very question. And it really ultimately comes down to styles. Syrah, as the magazine explained, is typically a lighter body wine with less alcohol by volume. Shiraz, however, is an intense wine with full body and higher alcohol by volume. To quote Decanter, Shiraz is generally richer with riper aromas. And let me just interject here that Petite Syrah is an entirely different grape, and that's a discussion for another day.
Jeez, okay, well, we won't get that one confused, and Petite Syrah is completely out of the conversation today. So back to the Syrah-Shiraz issue, though, if it's the same grape, then what is accounting for the difference in styles?
Well, part of that has to do with climate. There are always exceptions to rules, okay, but typically grapes from a cooler area, such as the northern Rhone Valley of France, will result in a Syrah style that is elegant and refined with lighter tannins, while grapes from a warmer area, such as Australia's Barossa Valley, is going to result in a Shiraz style that wine enthusiast calls, quote, lush, fruit-forward examples, end quote.
Okay. Well, you said climate is a part of the puzzle. What's another part?
Well, that's the winemaker, okay? You know, the ultimate style that ultimately makes it into the bottle is greatly influenced by the decisions made by the winemaker. Whether from a cool or warm climate, the winemaker has a lot of leeway with this grape to determine its ultimate style. You know, I want us to indulge me in an analogy here, okay?
Okay.
Think of the grape as a musical instrument and the winemaker as a musician, okay? In the old world style, the winemaker is playing a violin and the result is an elegant, refined Syrah. But in the new world style, the winemaker is playing a fiddle and the result is a jazzy, bluegrassy, robust Shiraz. You know, same grape or instrument, but played to a much different effect.
Okay, yeah, no, that's a great analogy. I think that I'm completely understanding now. So today we're drinking some fiddle-playing wine.
Yes, we are. Todd and I were preparing for a wine tasting here at TAP featuring a flight of Australian wines, and we considered several examples of Shiraz before settling in on today's choice. I decided to feature it on the podcast because it turned out to be such a fan favorite at that tasting.
Okay, well, I'm ready for a fan favorite. What are we drinking today?
This is a 2020 Shiraz from the Two Hands Winery. This bottle is under its Gnarly Dudes label, which I'll explain a bit later on the show, but I do like saying Gnarly Dudes.
That is pretty amazing. So I'm excited to hear more about that. But I've noticed you've had it decanting for a bit, so go ahead and pour when ready.
Yeah, so you can hear this going into the glasses. Here's your glass. Great.
Beautiful.
So even though this is still a relatively young wine, a 2020 vintage, I think a robust, full-bodied red like the Shiraz benefits from decanting a bit. So I've had it in the decanter for about 45 minutes. You know, that's plenty of time for it to unwind. But I just think that it's necessary for a tight red like this to have a chance to open up a bit in the decanter.
Well, and I can kind of see why from the color, too. I think you've had it in the decanter, and I could already tell that you had a really dark red. But as you were pouring, only calling it a dark red just really doesn't capture it, right? It's such an extreme depth of color here.
Well, you're right about that. So just allow me to skip forward to some tasting notes, which describes this color as, quote, deep, impenetrable black, end quote.
I mean, that does it. It's like incredibly inky. If you hold it up to a light in the glass, you cannot see anything through it. So that's incredibly intriguing. And I think I'm ready to go in for that first smell.
Go for it. The aromas on this one are likely to surprise you. So I'll give you a heads up.
Yeah, I appreciate that because this is a little different. I mean, it's kind of briny in a way, you know, a little bit of salinity on the nose, which is interesting. It's kind of like opening a jar of olives or something.
That's a good one. You know, so go in for another sniff.
Once you get past that briny smell, there are some fruit notes coming through. I'm smelling some raspberries, I would say. I think it's maybe time for a sniff, though. Or for a sip, actually.
Yes. Well, you know, I think that's what I meant by some of the surprising smells. I mean, I'm amazed at how briny olive and berry fruit notes come together in such a pleasing way on the nose. You know, it's not something I would necessarily expect to work together, but in this glass, that's a perfect combination.
Mm-hmm. I would definitely say it is. I mean, when you taste it like I just did, that first sip is quite a lot to take in.
So have another one.
Yeah, I'm going to have to because I got to figure out what I'm trying to say here. You know, I may have smelled raspberry, but the taste is really more blackberry. I mean, maybe the color is influencing me here, but it's changed.
No, you're right. I think the color, the smells, they all come together to influencing our palate, right? So when you saw that really dark color in the glass, I mean, I think that is an influence in our senses. There's definitely hints of blackberry, blackcurrant, you know, even blueberry, you know, all of those dark berries are very present in this wine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would definitely consider this a dark berry wine, all right. And as you were talking, I was taking more sips and really enjoying that salinity that's coming through. But I also can't help but notice that there's a smoky touch there.
Well, you know, that's another excellent observation, Charlotte. You know, as I was preparing for today's show, I had some more of this wine, and I was also intrigued by that faint smoky hint. And so there it is in the official notes, smoky paprika.
Okay.
You know? Huh. And I think that's just a wonderful flavor to find in a bottle of wine like this.
Yeah. Right? I mean, for such a dark wine, I was really concerned that I'd be turned off by some of those heavy tannins. That it would almost be like too astringent for my taste. But it's really not the case at all. I think it's much smoother in the finish than I expected. Maybe the smokiness is rounding it out or something.
Well, it's not overly stringent because just like last week's Carmenere, this wine's time in oak barrels help to round out the tannins. This wine aged in French oak for 12 months before bottling it, and 13% of that oak was new. But it's also important to know that this wine's finished. You called it smooth. The wine notes call it velvety.
Okay.
You know, it's not by accident. Right? The winemakers also invoked a malolactic fermentation. And that's a process in which bacteria convert malic acid into lactic acid. You know, this is a common practice in those buttery Chardonnays, for example. But, you know, perhaps the other flavors overwhelm any buttery prospect here, but it has certainly led to that smooth, almost creamy mouthfeel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that process seems to have tamed the tannins nicely.
Yeah, I think taming the tannins is a nice way of saying it. You get a tannic expression reminiscent of tea.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, the official tasting notes even describe a sip is having accents of Earl Grey tea. And that's what I just love about this particular wine. You know, the layers of sensation that unwind from the olive aromas to the blackberry fruit flavors, and then those are complemented by Earl Grey tea and smoky paprika. You know, what a bottle of wine to drink.
I mean, seriously, it's kind of, you know, umami almost with all of those things you've just described. And so that brings me to the next question that I'm going to have. And before we talk about pricing and pairing, I got to circle back to that label, okay? You said you were going to explain it, so the time is now. What is up with that name, Gnarly Dudes?
Well, thanks for reminding me about that. The Australians always come up with great names for their wine. Next time you're in a wine shop, browse the aisles with the Australian selections and you'll see what I mean, right? As for this one, the Two Hands Winery admits that Dude from the movie The Big Lebowski was part of the inspiration.
Oh, that's
they even cite on their website the line from the 1998 film, quote, "Nobody calls me Lebowski. You got the wrong guy. I'm the dude man," end quote. You know, that's the famous line from the film. But mostly the term gnarly dudes refers to those twisted trunks of the old Shiraz vines that produce the grapes of this bottle. And when you look at the picture of those old vines, you know, even on the label, you know, some of these are decades old, and you'd just agree, those vines are gnarly.
Hmm, that's so funny. I love having that great backstory to this wine. And yeah, the bottle is awesome. You can see some of those gnarly vines depicted on it, which is very fun and ties back to the origin. So now let's talk about the pairing for today's Shiraz with some food. My favorite part. We've established the complexity of it. So does that make it easier or harder to find the right pairings?
No, I don't think you have to overthink your pairing with today's wine. You know, let's start with a cheese pairing. This robust wine will hold up well with most any strong cheese. So I'd go with an aged sharp cheddar. I've placed some of that on a plate there in front of you. So please give that aged cheddar some sips with this Shiraz.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, wow. That is delicious. The sharpness of the cheddar is just slicing through that fruity, smoky wine. And they are really made for each other in like a beautiful, salty cinema happening in my mouth.
Yeah, you're right. That hint of smokiness, that subtle spiciness just makes this, you know, a perfect wine for summer grilling.
Yeah.
Right? It goes so well with that cheddar, but the Aussies love their Barbie,
mm-hmm.
right? So they make a wine that works for grilled meats also. You know, so I'd suggest a wonderful T-bone steak or a ribeye, but this will also work nicely with simple burgers. You know. Also, we didn't mention this earlier, but today Shiraz comes in at only 14.2% alcohol by volume, and that is on the low end of ABV for a Shiraz. But I think that's another good reason for it works well, you know, at a backyard grilling.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think even just trying this, the idea of a burger in my mouth, you know, and like the smell of fresh cut grass or something, it's scene setting. It's beautiful. And you know, there's still enough summer left for me to put that to the test. So I just might.
Right. Well, allow me to invite myself over when you do.
Anytime. And so if you're coming over to eat my steak and burgers, what am I going to have to spend on this wine? You're not going to have me break the bank, right?
Not on this show. I think you can find some great deals on this wine. At the time of the recording, the Vivino app listed the national average price at $43. But honestly, I've never seen it at that price.
Okay.
The app was selling it for $32, and I paid $30 for the bottle we're drinking. So shop around and should be able to find it in the $30 range, maybe even a little less with some volume discounts. Right. In any case, the Vivino app has the 2020 vintage ranked among the top 5% of wines in the world. So you're getting a great quality to price deal.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, another great wine at a really good price. So listeners, do your best shopping. Be prepared to wow your grilling guests with a fabulous Gnarly Dudes Shiraz. And now you can say that you know a little bit more about the name, and you can then please your party guests in the process and enjoy saying the label as much as I do. Gnarly Dudes.
Well, Charlotte, it's almost time for our break. And when we come back, we'll be talking with our good friend Todd Hurt, the proprietor here at Tapped Athens Wine Market. You know, we were here recording our 10th episode last week, and we'll be back next week for the season's conclusion. So we're delighted to have Todd as our guest for today's The Finish. It's the portion of the show we hope will linger with you long after you stop listening to us. So, you know, that's just like the finish of a good wine, right?
I love it. A great setup. Listeners, please stay and sip with us while we take a short break. And we'll be back with Todd in a moment. While we're away, I'm going to have some more of this cheddar and Shiraz. We'll be back. Welcome back, everyone, to Wines We Drink. This is the portion of the show we call The Finish. Today, Keith and I are joined by Todd Hurt, the Tapped proprietor. Welcome back, Todd.
Great to be with you.
We can't thank you and your wife, Angela, enough for hosting us this season. We did our first three episodes here. We'll be back for one more final show this season. I can't believe it.
We're delighted to have you. Anyone who likes drinking wine and talking about wine is always welcome to Tapped.
Todd, that's great. Well, let me start by asking you the role consumer education plays in your shop here. You know, we spent today's episode explaining the differences in Shiraz and Syrah to our listeners, for example. So how much education do you have to do with your customers?
Well, Keith, we pride ourselves here on no wine snobbery. So what we like to do is engage with our customers, find out what they like, and then try to show them new wines that maybe they haven't tried.
I think we also embrace the no wine snobbery philosophy on this podcast. So.
We try, but sometimes I let it sneak in a bit.
That's okay. We're building everyone up to the appropriate level of snobbery, maybe. So when you joined us earlier in this season on episodes 1 and 3, we asked you about running a wine bar. But let's turn the focus to now to your own wine journey for a moment. What led to your love of wine?
Well, Charlotte, I have to say my lovely bride is the reason Aww. That I enjoy wine so much. We love finding and trying new varietals that we can share with friends.
Well, you know, that's great. I mean, I love traveling with my wife and going to lots of different, you know, wine country tours and winery tastings. And, of course, the tastings that we share together here at Tap. You know, it's great to have that partner to share wine with. It's part of the enjoyment.
Right. It's also part of the memory making, right? We talk a lot about community and storytelling and how wine is a lifestyle. And that's kind of what I think about when I think about wine as a lifestyle. It helps you sort of punctuate those memories. So you have access, Todd, to so many different wines and you taste so many different styles. Has that exposure changed your palate at all? Does it start to blend over time? Or in other words, what was your favorite wine coming into this venture? And is that still your favorite?
Well, you know, I've always enjoyed dry red wines. And I'll have to say Angela is much better with the white wines and the rosés, but I'm still a red wine drinker. I love the dry reds. Definitely Cabernet Sauvignon. The Napa Cabs are definitely my favorite. However, I'm not a one-trick pony. I do love a good Cab Franc, a Malbec, and even a Tannat once in a while.
Okay, wow.
You know, I mean, you talked about your wife, Angela, being more of the wine person, but I'm going to put you on the spot. You talked about the red you like, but if you had to have that white, what white are you going to go for, Todd?
I definitely would go for a fragrant white because I needed to have some body to it. So probably an Albarino.
Oh, that's really wonderful. That's really wonderful. I think for me, my go-to white would be a Chenin Blanc.
Yeah.
Probably one from the South African, you know, Cape area.
Mm-hmm. Definitely would be my pick over a Sauvignon Blanc any day.
Great. So,
well, and we had a great Chenin Blanc on this podcast too. So, you know, hint, hint, listeners, go back and listen to that one maybe. But I also am hearing Todd say some words that I've never heard before, so I'm writing them down and looking them up later. Todd, thank you so much for joining us again to talk about Taft, your wine journey, and how that led you here. Thanks again for hosting our show. And don't forget, we'll be back for our last episode, so we'll see you soon.
All right. Thank you so much.
So, Keith, we have to face facts. Next week is our last show for this third season. How are you planning to send us off?
Well, we put Todd on the spot today, and he told us that his favorite wine, the Reds, was those big California, Napa, Cabernet Sauvignon, right? So I'm going to go do the same thing. I'm going to confess. My favorite red is a Cabernet Franc, and I will have a value price gem for us to end the season with next week.
Awesome. Okay, well, hey, that seems like a perfect way to end the season, drinking your favorite varietal while providing our listeners with insight on a good deal. So until next week, everyone.
I promise you will not be disappointed. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Wines We Drink. Listen to our other episodes anywhere you get your podcasts, and be sure to follow us on Twitter @WinesWeDrink and on Instagram @TheWinesWeDrink. Cheers.